Well, a new exhibition titled Shakes, Fakes and Camel Ears is celebrating the stories, contributions and legacies of the outback camel ears who arrived in WA 150 years ago. The exhibition is being held by the State Library of Western Australia and includes in-depth histories of these diverse communities as well as individual and familial stories, while also dispelling assumptions and stereotypes about the camel ears. Supporting the exhibit will be a panel discussion this Thursday the 18th that'll delve deeper into this history, which is going to coincide with the 120-year anniversary of the Perth Mosque. Joining me in the studio to discuss the exhibition further is Rita Alfred Segar, who is the curator and researcher of the exhibition, and Tarun Singh, researcher and panellist for Thursday's State Library Conversation. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Jeff.
Well, Rita, how did this new exhibit come about? What's the aim in exploring the history of the camel ears?
Well, Jeff, I've got to say, you've just stolen all my best lines. But yes, I guess the way it came about is that, as you know, the State Library is a repository for the history of WA. And so we have a collection of all sorts of different things, records, histories, stories, photographic, historical artifacts, that kind of thing. And one of my jobs as a curator is really to kind of delve into all those treasures that we have and say, well, what can we bring out? What can we make into an interest point for modern day audiences? What is going to resonate? And I always find that stories are the thing that resonate most. And so this exhibition came about there were two points, really. One was that there was a text written in a language that most people, that I didn't understand. It was written, we think, in Pashto, which is a North Indian dialect. And it was, so it was kind of like, it was in our collection, it was in our heritage collection, but we didn't really know what it was about until a librarian that we have who speaks Dari, which is the Iranian language, could actually, sort of disseminate what the text said. And then when she read that, she was saying, well, this is fascinating. This is all about the history of camel ears in WA 150 years ago. And from that find in our collection, we then kind of started digging around. And what we found then was that this year, 2024, actually celebrates 120 years of the founding and building of the Perth Mosque. And the Perth Mosque is the second oldest continuously functioning mosque in the whole of Australia. So that's pretty historical.
Well, it is very historical. I guess a lot of us, Australians, don't really understand the depth of Muslim history in our country. I mean, you can swear on the Quran as well as the Bible, and there's a copy of it in Parliament that is there for all to use for the same period of time that there's been a Bible there. So I guess there's a lot of misunderstanding about history. Is that one of the aims of sort of trawling through this information, is to get the right story out there, maybe to get to the truth?
Well, yes, and I think, that was the thinking behind the title, a little bit provocative, Shakes, Fakes and Camel Ears. And the reasoning behind that was that actually they weren't just all camel ears. They were entrepreneurs and businessmen and writers and sort of small-time shopkeepers, everybody who, just like the migrant story all over again, all the time repeated, people looking for an opportunity to come and make, sort of a living somewhere else and then be able to kind of send that money back, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, there was an opportunity in the late 1860s and 70s. when Australia was being opened up, with you know, sort of railways being built, the Overland Telegraph being built, etc., and the outback, especially of Western Australia, very, very, you know, difficult to navigate for the regular types of animals that maybe, you know, would have been used before, oxen, donkeys, mules. They just couldn't cut it in you know, these dry, arid conditions that are the West Australian outback. And the camels, of course, could. And so, you know, that was one of the reasons why we started bringing camels over. It was to build Australia.
Well, the camels could, but the people that were already here couldn't. So, well, can you give us a bit of a history about the camelias that were first to arrive in WA and how they contributed? What work were they undertaking around the care of these camels?
Well, one of the reasons why I've got Turin on the panel on Thursday is because you've done so much research, Turin, on Sikhs and the history of Sikh Australia. But one of the things I think in a conversation that we had was that you really opened my eyes to that these weren't just men, these weren't just so-called Afghan cameleers. They came from all over the place. And in some ways, this is a British Empire story, isn't it?
Yes. Like, in my research, what I found out was, yes, the cameleers started coming in 1860s, mainly camels coming from Karachi port, modern Pakistan. But there were not only people from Afghanistan, there were a lot of from Punjab or Sikh. Punjab was a big state there, part of India. And a lot of the Sikhs who were mainly with the British Army, so they could converse, they could understand the drill and the communication things. And they had camels, because they were basically farmers, but turned soldiers, then back to farming. So they knew how to handle these animals, and especially camels also. So they came as entrepreneurs to explore Australia. So they
Camels were like a little bit of a doorway and entrance, but they could see some bigger opportunities around.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. And what I found out doing a bit of research around the wheat belt area of WA recently, what I found was when there was a recession in the gold fields in around 1910s and 20s, a lot of these camelias started buying lands for farming in wheat belt.
Right.
And government was opening the wheat belt for farming, and there was a new fertilizer called superphosphate in those days, and government started attracting the immigrants and cattle and gave new grants and incentives to settle, especially ex-servicemen also. So a lot of these camelias started settling into the wheat belt, which was on the way from Perth to Kalgoorlie, Coolgardie.
Yes, indeed.
And they might have made some money in camelearing or transport. They bought farms, but they had to clear the bush. Mm-hmm. So they were clearing the bush, but when they didn't have enough, there were already white farmers, so they worked as farm hands or farm laborers in those farms. And because there was a slump in mining, there was less job in transport or camels, but every now and then an odd contract came up.
Right.
So they still maintained the camels. They were farmers as well as farm hands, and some bought horses and wagons. So the same person could be a camelier and a farmer and a farm hand and a hawker also.
Tremendous agility. I think that's the point.
Well, I guess one had to be during that era, during the Depression.
Absolutely.
That necessitated, didn't it?
Yes.
For sure. I mean, there was a big... So if we just go back to the 1870s, when the gold rush took place in, you know, sort of the Wild West of WA, in Kalgoorlie and Coolgardie, et cetera, et cetera. That was where we really found the camelier trade, you know, really kind of took off, because, again, miners would need supplies, they would need, food, they would need equipment, etc., etc., that only in these vast distances, only camel trains could really navigate, as well as, Taran, camel trains, 60 camels, 60, 70 camels long,
yep.
Going all the way up and down WA with all sorts of other things like, wool from sheep farms, grains, all sorts of different things that were loaded on these camels.
So they'd be carrying supplies out to the wheat belt and out to the gold fields and then carrying the gold and the wool and, well, I guess wouldn't be carrying too much wheat bags on the back of camels, but there was traffic both ways.
Yes, and there's a camel wagon sitting in Meekatharra. That camel wagon needed 18 to 20 camels to pull that wagon.
It must be huge.
Yes.
Yeah.
So those are very interesting things. Like, I interviewed one person, I forgot the name, he was in Hillary's, and he said, you don't understand. He almost got his eyes wet when he said, the footprints of these camels are where the highways are today.
Wow.
So the roads or the highways, today we go very easily with mobile and good four-wheel drives and trucks and all that. The camels went there first. And the indigenous people helped them guide also how to go, where to go, where to have water in case. And these camels could cover up to 20 to 25 miles per day.
Phenomenal.
What was the relationship between the Cameliers and indigenous people in the areas that they're occupying?
So this is a really interesting part of the research that we did and, part of the showcasing that we want to do in the exhibition, which is that the history goes back a very, very long way. And one of the reasons, of course, is that both, communities were sidelined and ostracized, really, by the European settler community. And so you'd have, the towns for European settlers. Then on the other side would be what were known as Gan towns, which is where the, Cameliers were housed with their animals. And then following, after that, further down the bush, there would be the indigenous, communities whose land, of course, it really was. And so one of the things I think that the two communities, the Cameliers and the Aboriginal communities, found that there were lots of similarities. There was a respect for the land. There was a respect for the animals that worked the land, and the Cameliers and the migrants who came here at that time. For a lot of them, they were single men. They weren't allowed to, the immigration rules were you weren't allowed to come with your families. So most of them were young, single men. If they went back, they were usually on three-year term contracts, which was, renewed. If they went back, it was difficult to come back into the country. And so they were really, what did they have? They had what they knew, I think, their religion. Not all of them were Muslims. And again, that's a little bit of a stereotype that all of them were Muslims. And of course, they weren't. The majority, because of the region that they came from.
Well, I imagine many of them were Sikh. Just the thought of that and nature of Sikhism in terms of sharing resources and that being a tenet of indigenous culture, there must have been some synergy there between those peoples.
Absolutely.
There's a very good example in the Harvey region, especially in Yarloop town. A lot of Australians must be aware of Mr. Jack Davis. He was a playwright and a poet, very famous. He earned the Order of Australia and the Order of British Empire.
Right.
And his grandfather was a Sikh. And as I mentioned about the planning of the towns, like there was separate segments for white people, indigenous, and these Cameliers. Not only that, in Yarloop and Harvey, after 6 o'clock in the evening, the indigenous people were not allowed. And there's an interesting story of Jack Davis when he was like around 16, 17, he used to come to that spot every day at 6 o'clock, police used to arrest him. And he used to share that the people are not getting equal rights. Mm-hmm. He used to be produced in Perth Court, and when he was released, whatever, one day, 2 days, same evening he was again there at 6 o'clock.
Go Jack. Well, what are the some common stereotypes or misconceptions that this exhibition might, you know, wash away for people?
Well, I think one of the things is that, you know, these weren't just men who came cap in hand grateful for everything. And as Turan says, you know, actually a lot of them were quite political. A lot of them were very, very capable of, you know, standing up for their own rights. And I want you just to talk a little bit about the Sikh protest of 1890. You'll remind me of the date.
Yes. While doing this research, we found a letter in 1898... All these Sikh, whether camellias or hawkers, or some of them were part-time wrestlers also, they did not get lease for mining rights in Goldfields region. So in 1898, they gave a petition to the government, to the Queen, that we are not being treated equal. And that was signed by 100 Sikhs. They were not given, for some reason, it didn't materialize. But the thing is, they stood up for the rights, and they were all over WA. Look at the size of WA. They were in Windham up north, in Geraldton, Dongra, Meekatharra, Wheatbelt, down south, Wandering, even Balbarup, Manjimup. So they were all over the place, but they collected together and signed that petition. So they were very politically active also. And funny enough, a lot of these signatories were ex-defense personnel, ex-army men in British Army in India. But if you look at, compare that era of 1898 in Kalgoorlie or Australia, or Western Australia, linked with the Tira campaign in Afghanistan, Kandahar, people who are interested in military history, a lot of these Sikhs were in Kandahar in Afghanistan. So there is a very famous battle, Battle of Saragadi, in 1897, between 26 and about 10,000 locals in Afghanistan. And those of the same regiments, those people were here in Kalgoorlie signing this petition and standing up for rights. So yesterday they were fighting with the weapons, and today they are fighting with the pen. Not one and two, hundreds.
And so many years ago. It's just so...
But I think it's also about identity. And it was very much about, they were standing up for their rights because they were saying, well, we are British citizens. We actually are part of the empire. And the more that we kind of uncover the layers of this story, and there are so many layers, so please, you know, sort of listeners, come along to the library. The exhibition goes on up until June. So do come along and, you know, sort of sift through those layers yourself. But one of the things that I think came over again and again is that this is actually a colonial story. So we are all linked through the colonial history that incorporates Australia.
Well, both of you, thank you so much for coming into the studio this morning and for getting this exhibition together. There's so much more to talk about, but I think that gives us an interesting bait to going and checking
Can
out
Can I just give a little plug?
The exhibition, please, Rita.
Just a little plug, which is that if you've been interested by anything and you want to book in, we still can, you can still register. Go on to the website for the State Library.
So this is for the panel conversation,
yes? For Thursday, and just go on to the What's On section, and you'll be able to register to attend that event.
What time on the 18th?
It is from 6 to 8:30. And it's a free event, so do come along. There's, you know, sort of food, entertainment. We've even managed to get a live Afghan musician and percussionist to come along and play so that we can get a real flavour for what that might feel like, you know, sort of an event like that might feel like. We've got some beautiful food, et cetera, et cetera.
Once you said flavour, Rita, that was going to be the next place I was going to.
and the other thing is that we didn't want to let this go, really. So we've designed a heritage trail map, a walking trail that you can take from the State Library all the way to the mosque, which is further down William Street. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, sort of is up on our website as well. You can take a look at that. And along the way, you'll see all sorts of different interesting things that will relate back to the Cameliers.
And now, as you mentioned, Perth, I now remember, but I will have to dig out this information again. The Sikhs also contributed for the construction of the Perth Mosque.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yes, they did. Yes.
It's such a Sikh thing to be doing. That is fantastic. Both you, congratulations again. And look, I'm looking forward to paying a visit. I'm sure there's many of our listeners out there that are going to be making their way down there as well. Wonderful. Look forward to seeing you on Thursday.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
That was Rita Alfred-Sagar and Tarun Singh chatting with their head of the Shakes, Fakes and Cameliers launch and panel conversation at the State Library of Western Australia. Kicks off this week on Thursday the 18th, 6 o'clock. Get in there, folks. It's an interesting part of our combined culture.